Good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an exciting show for you today. Before I invite you to share the show this morning, I'm going to also invite you to pay particularly close attention to today's guests, because you're definitely going to want to follow them on social media. You're going to want to follow up with them. You're going to want to find out what they're doing. So listen, learn, grab a pen, grab a pencil, grab your recorder, grab your notebook, whatever it is that you need to be able to take notes. You definitely want to get that now, because our guests are amazing. So go ahead and share the show with your friends, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. He is a serial entrepreneur. He's someone you definitely can learn from. And he is the CEO of not only one business, but two. And I'm pretty sure that he has some other projects going on as well. Mr. Jim Steele. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
I am excellent. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Of course. So you're a serial entrepreneur and you sit at the helm of two companies. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Danby Appliances and Shipperbee. Shipperbee's brand new startup-y, you know, save the world, by reducing carbon from parcel shipping. And Danby is an older established appliance company. We make refrigerators and freezers and wine coolers.
Okay. I'm confused. Okay, so you make refrigerators and appliances and wine coolers.
Yeah. Yeah, refrigerators, wine coolers, basically almost everything with a compressor. So at this time of year, we also sell a lot of window air conditioners and stuff like that. So we make 2 million appliances a year. So it's not tiny. It's not startup, but Shipperbee is brand new startup with only about 30 employees. And it's a courier business.
Okay, so when you say wine coolers, you don't mean the wine coolers you drink?
No. Wine coolers that you put your wine in to keep them cool.
Okay, that's why I was confused. I was like, what is Jim doing over here? He's doing appliances, and now he drinking in the back. Like, what are you doing, Jim?
Well, a lot of the appliances tend to center around like beer fridges and wine coolers for some reason. So, no, that's what I do. Although, one thing I am doing, which is a little different, we're actually making ventilators right now, but that's not our business. But when COVID hit, we saw there's a crisis. There's not enough ventilators. People are dying in the halls in Italy. Didn't want the same thing to happen here. So we pivoted and we're making ventilators. Now, we couldn't do it ourselves. So we're mostly just doing the assembly labor. We partner with other companies to do that. So that's a little side thing we're not long-term a medical manufacturer, but have to do something sometime to help, right?
Absolutely. But it's amazing. One of the things that I've seen during this process is just people's creativity. When I say this process, I mean COVID-19. I have seen people with interview guests on the show where they were doing one industry, COVID-19 happened, and now they have to pivot and they get so creative. So I think that was creative to go from what you do standardly to now I'm going to create ventilators.
Yeah, which is That's just entrepreneurship. That's what you have to do. And I call myself a social entrepreneur. Part of the reason I do what I do is to quote, save the world. And so that's one way I can save the world. And it has a second benefit to my company. It covers some overhead and helps me keep people employed so that when this lifts and people start buying more wine coolers again, then I haven't lost my good people.
Yes. And you've been able to expand.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So why start another company then?
Oh, I did that one because shipping parcels is so bad for the environment. And we devised a system that can save 73.1% of the greenhouse gas per parcel shipped. And I'm an environmental guy. And so that's my Change the World project. Mm-hmm. And parcel shipping is growing right now it's actually growing at 30% per year. It was 20% per year. But with COVID, everyone's getting everything online. And so there's not enough capacity to carry it all. Mm-hmm. So that's one that we've just launched. We've only launched in Canada. We're going to launch small. And it's taken a little setback because of COVID. But when COVID's over, it'll go through the sky again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have some more questions for you, Jim. But I want to go over and introduce our next guest. And then we'll come back to you. Our next guest is a two-time Emmy Award winner. I haven't even got an Emmy nomination. I got to figure out how to do that, how I get in that lane, how I get that award, because I need to sit it like right here. So every time somebody, you know, questions me during a show, I'll just be like, and then I'll come back. But Leah Fraser, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
I am wonderful. I love your outfit. I love your hair. I love your smile. I love your energy.
Thank you.
How did you get these Emmy Awards?
It happened by accident, to be quite honest. So I'm kind of a hybrid. I do journalism. So I do a lot of media, TV and that. But I also had, I started my career in entrepreneurialism, leaving my job as an attorney and starting a personal shopping business. So I left my career and went into fashion, started doing a lot of personal shopping and styling, which led to fashion journalism, doing TV for Fox and CBS, and started working on projects with an ABC affiliate where we were going in and we were styling a lot of the anchors or helping them creatively market through commercials. And so two of the commercials and the projects that we did, they were really deep. It was teaching women how to love themselves. And what I didn't realize at the time was that the station was submitting all of these projects for Emmy Awards. And I'm just showing up and doing my job. And then next thing you know, I get a call that says, hey, you've got to come out to the awards. This one got nominated, you know, for a regional Emmy, and then it actually wins. And so then we work on another project. The next year, the station submits it again. And then our second project won. And then now during just everything that's going on civilly, we just released a new project on our local ABC affiliate called While I Have Your Attention. And we went and we interviewed probably 18 influential Black leaders in the Dallas community, myself included. I was behind the camera and I was in front of the camera. And I already know, because I've worked with this producer so many times before, that after it's all said and done, he's probably going to package that up and submit that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious to see, just given the climate, and it's been so impactful for our city, people crying. I've had DMs from white women. How can I help? I saw your story. I never knew this. And it is really moving and shaking up our city. And so with that type of impact, I'm hoping that by this time next year, I can say three time Emmy for the work that we're doing for the community. So that's how I got those two.
No, that's wonderful. We're going to hold that space for you to get that third Emmy and so many more, so many other awards. But what stands out to me and what's interesting to me about you is you just so, to me, like nonchalant. You're like, I was overworking for Fox. And Fox just submitted it, you know, and it's like what people miss is that you had to get in the door at Fox. You know what I mean? You had to get in the door at CBS. And those are not the easiest places to even get in the door. Like you can't just be guaranteed to get a security guard job at CBS and Fox, you know. So your story is about how hard you worked and what you've done before you got there and before you got the opportunity to even work on these projects that were submitted for the Emmys. So I want to talk a little bit about your history, because you mentioned you were a journalist. Okay, tell, because that's what people really want to know, honestly. They want to know, how did you get that bio and that resume that allowed you to get in the door at CBS and Fox?
I love what you said. Definitely it's about opportunity. And so I started my career as an attorney, and then I had a dream. So if anybody just doesn't, you know me, I'm kind of a free spirit. I fly wherever anything kind of takes me. And the dream wouldn't go away. And it was about fashion and styling. So I started it as a hobby, but mm-hmm. I loved it so much because I was styling women every week. Started with the women in my firm, and then they kept referring me out. And I'm like, holy crap, I think I have something here. Is this a business? Mm-hmm. So then that's when I started writing, and the journalism kind of kicked in because I wanted to be that source of fashion at the time I was living in Houston. But I think to your point, the reason I've gotten to where I am today is because not only just hard work, but when opportunity knocked and they called within 2 months of me starting my business, can you come on Fox and do 3 segments to talk about this fashion, you know, event going on in Houston? I didn't say no. Even though I didn't know how to do it, I showed up. When the opportunity arose, I walked through that door. When the opportunity arose to work on those projects, I never even knew that they were being submitted for Emmys. I just knew this is an opportunity to work with this ABC affiliate. This could do wonders for my business and get my name out there. I may not get any sleep, but I'm gonna do it. And then months later, I find out, okay, we're up in the runnings for an Emmy. So I think it's all about recognizing when those doors are opening for you and just powering through those doors at the time that the opportunity arises, because that window is so small. Mm-hmm. And there were things that I sacrificed, but no, I didn't sleep, you know, mm-hmm. but I'm sure Jim can comment on that as well. That's the entrepreneur life for many. You know, I didn't sleep. I had to sacrifice going out. Maybe I have happy hour at the house. Mm-hmm. Because those opportunities were so important to me. And so that's kind of how I've been able to just propel through my career, is I see an opportunity, I go for it.
Yes, that's wonderful. Jim, did you put your party hat down, take your party hat off and sacrifice so you can start your appliance business and Shipperbee?
Well, I don't see why you can't party and start your business, but yes, absolutely. People who say work for yourself because that way you're your own boss, you can do whatever you want. Like, yes, you can work till midnight. That's what you do when you're your own boss. But absolutely, that's part of entrepreneurship. But we all look back on those times fondly. And it's mm-hmm. the times that I worked the hardest and had the least amount of sleep that are the ones that I actually do remember the fondest. When, as a matter of fact, right now in COVID, we all have a massive challenge. Mm-hmm. We're going to look back at this. I remember when we tackled that challenge and we dealt with this when times are peacetime, so to speak, things are easy. We don't have to think like that.
Yes, there have been so many people that have shown their creative side. I've seen people who, you know, maybe they were a producer and focusing on just producing content, but now they started script writing. I mean, like, it's just like, what can I do during this time frame in order for me to continue my business or to continue some aspect of what I'm doing? Interesting. We're going to come back to you, Jim. I want to introduce our next guest, Mr. Cody May. Cody is going to tell us as well about his journey. He is the managing partner at Studio PTBO. Good morning, Cody. How are you?
I am absolutely wonderful. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited. I love this this roundtable and you know, even the people that introduced themselves so far. So I'm super excited to chat today.
Yes, we have some questions for you. I haven't come up with all of them yet. But tell us about Studio PTBO.
Yeah, we're a full service marketing agency. We help clients track more leads, automate their lead nurture, close more clients. And I joined this journey about probably 2.5 years ago now. And we've been able to triple our revenue in the last couple of years. I spent 10 years in the telecom industry, really. So I worked for a company called Best Buy, just managing teams, just having a passion to really contribute more, larger contribution, larger impact. And when I made that transition in entrepreneurship and joined this this agency and became a managing partner, it really allowed me to have that larger contribution, that larger impact that I was had a really deep desire to have. So, you know, we work with clients all across multiple sectors, you know, really kind of our niche is lead generation. And, you know, we work with physiotherapists, real estate agents, mortgage brokers, really any service-based business that is looking to kind of get their name out there. And yeah, we work with passionate clients and we have a passionate team that is just has a desire to help people. And that's kind of like a high level overview on us. Like we just, mm-hmm. Like it's been a wild ride.
Did you say you initially worked for Best Buy?
I did. Yeah. I spent 10 years in the telecom version of Best Buy. So I worked for Best Buy Mobile. Okay. Learn a ton. Like, you know, I owe that organization, you know, a lot. And it's funny, you know, with Jim, because a lot of his actual product we sold at Best Buy. So, you know, very familiar with Danby, you know, electronics and, you know, appliances. So, yeah, I spent 10 years there, you know, learned about systems and processes, but just had a kind of a larger vision for where I wanted to take my life and what I wanted to do. And that kind of sparked the transition out of the corporate world into, you know, becoming an entrepreneur and just the larger impact, larger contribution. So it's been really cool.
Oh, that's great. Now, I was asking about Best Buy because I recognized when you mentioned it, that energy, because it's a funny story, at least to me. I have a Best Buy near my house, and I'm a nerd, in case anybody can figure it out. Like, I love electronics. I love gadgets. I love, you know, things for your phone, everything. So I always convince the Best Buy guys to do stuff that they're not supposed to do. And they always, I always go, and they always be like, Sharifa, you know, we're not supposed to do that. I'm like, yeah, go ahead and install it. Just install it. Like, I know, but go ahead and, you know, put it on the laptop.
I know people like you. Don't worry. I've dealt with your kind. That's for sure. That's hilarious. No, I love it. Yeah. Like it's, you know, yeah. You talk about the energy. There was a ton of energy when I was, you know, and it was cool because I was able to kind of, when I transitioned to entrepreneurship, I was able to kind of take that energy, but you're exactly right. You know, the Best Buy culture is very much so of like, you know, one of our values when I was there was be amazing. It was really all about customer service and, you know, giving back to clients and making sure they're taken care of. So I definitely understand what you're saying there for sure.
Yes, but you see that when you start with a certain philosophy or start with a certain belief system, mm-hmm. you carry that out into your own projects and your own businesses. So how did you come up with the name Studio PTBO?
So yeah, it's really interesting. So one of my business partners runs a company called PTBO Canada. So I'm from a small town about an hour east of Toronto called Peterborough. And about 8 years ago, actually 10 years ago now, he started a media company called PTBO Canada, kind of short for Peterborough, Canada. And then a couple of years ago, when we all kind of partnered together, we kind of just came up with like the name Studio PTBO. And the premise behind it was really, as we work with clients across North America, we want to kind of draw attention back to Peterborough. Cause like, I really believe I live in the best city in the world.
Long beaches, but that's well, okay.
I've been to Long Beach. You've never been to Peterborough. So
I don't think you've been to every part. So I know we're at the top of that list. Can we tie?
Yeah, we could tie there. But you know, I love Peterborough. I love the people. I love the city. And really more than anything, we're just trying to drive attention back to Peterborough. You know, we've been seen kind of as like the Boulder, Colorado of Canada. Like we're very much so a startup city. So yeah, like, you know, that's kind of like, we would just want to draw attention as we work with more and more clients across North America. We want to draw attention back to Peterborough.
Jim, are you in Canada as well? Jim, sorry.
You have to unmute when this works. Yes. I'm in Canada. I even know where Peterborough is. I'm in Guelph. So there we go. Yes, I've been to Peterborough.
We're close by.
Exactly.
Yes. So Jim has his new business, Cody, right? He has Shipper Bee.
I've heard of it.
Jim, how does everyone always hear of all your businesses? You are the man, Jim. I didn't even know you was up there like that.
Well, you see, the advantage of Canada is a small country, so everybody knows everybody. Right. And that's how you know about how Cody would know about Shipper Bee, because it's actually small with a reasonably small press. But interestingly enough, with Danby Appliances, more than half our sales are in the States, but we're just a tiny fleck in that ocean as compared to in Canada, where we would be, if not dominant, we're one of the major players that you go and ask anybody. Everybody knows who Danby Appliances is in Canada.
Ooh, look at Jim. You go, Jim. I'm with you, Jim. Everybody knows the name Sharifa Hardy in every town across America. That's what I'm playing. Oh, the nation.
And now that I'm on Sharifa, you see, everyone in the United States will know Danby Appliances. So there you go.
That's right. And so when the sales increase and they quadruple, then I'm going to come. And what day is payday, Jim? Fridays?
Yeah, Thursday. But yeah, it's all the same. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then we'll send you a wine cooler. That's it. You need a wine cooler.
I need a wine cooler that you drink. I need to relax after the show, but I don't know what else. Cody, you're the marketing man. You're the marketing genius. We're going to get Shipper Bee out there a little bit more. What's our marketing plan for Shipper Bee?
Marketing plan for Shipper Bee. You know, we whenever we talk marketing plans, it's always like we always try to reverse engineer and try to understand the target audience first. you know, because I think that's something super important. It's, you know, sitting down and actually coming up with a strategy. I think a lot of businesses, when they first start with marketing, they're like, they say like, what's the strategy? And then they just implement something. But I think strategy is something super important to like, in order to understand strategy, you need to understand the audience. Because in order to write good copy, or what we call good messaging, you need to understand who you're talking to. And that's what we find to be the best. You know, so really I would ask Jim, like, who are we trying to reach? Like, who are we trying to, like, I've heard of the brand, but is it like, who is the end consumer? I guess you could say.
So Shipper B is like FedEx or UPS. Shipper B is a courier. Our customers are the companies, but the companies are shipping to consumers. The companies are shipping to business. It's basically just a courier, courier business. But the target market that resonates best are people who are environmentally aware, because people want to support the environment, say, oh, we save 73% of the greenhouse gas. That's part of their brand. So it resonates very well with companies that are in the, you know, worried about the environment.
That is excellent. Cody?
Yeah, you know, like, I think really everything at the end of the day comes back to, like, you know, if that's the message we want to go after, then we have to figure out who, like, where are they? Like, you know, the fact that you're even on this podcast as a CEO, you know, shows me that you understand, you know, PR. So whatever we talk about, marketing, the best marketing is speaking directly to the audience. Make sure that you're getting in front of them. So whether it be Facebook ads, Instagram ads, Instagram, in my opinion, like, if you ran paid advertising on Instagram, if you want to go after kind of those people that are, you know, environmentally focused, Instagram might be a really great platform in order to get your message out in front of people. The other element is just like social influencers. I think that the biggest thing that we see is, like, you know, if you can get somebody to actually sell your product, which, again, like, a lot of what we do, we really focus around paid advertising. So it's like, what medium is going to be the best form of paid advertising? You know, so based on very little knowledge I have about the company, like, Instagram advertising, you know, is kind of the direction that I would always tell people to go with, because, again, it's all attention is on social. Is what we often say to our clients. So that's kind of, like, I guess, like, high level overview on, like, what my recommendation would be. But in regards to marketing, like, if are you running any sort of, like, paid advertising right now, Jim, or are you doing anything like that?
Well, for Shipper B, we are not running any paid advertising because the volume is so high that I actually don't want to make a lot more sales on ShipperBee right now. Because when you introduce a new product or service, the key is to have all 5-star ratings. Part of what gives us all 5-star ratings is, if you're growing, if you're doubling every week, it's hard to get 5-star ratings. If you double every 2 months, then you can get 5-star ratings. So ShipperBee, I appreciate the thought, but let's not advertise a lot. On Danbee, of course, we can always sell more appliances. But that's a different market, right? It's bar fridges, freezers. Freezers, I can't make enough freezers right now because of COVID. You'd think I planned it because it's good for my business. What's bad for my business, people aren't buying as many wine coolers. And then air conditioners just sell because it's the weather. Yeah, exactly.
I like what you said. I like what you said there, because, like, I think that's important to understand. I think a lot of business owners don't understand that, like, that there are 5 key core functions to growing a business. We, like, whenever we work with clients, it's like, lead generation, lead nurture, conversion, delivery, retention, resell, upsell. So it's like, if you can't deliver, like, there's, if you don't have a delivery method and you don't have something to sell someone, then it's really hard to do that paid advertising. So this is, like, something that, again, like, a lot of business owners don't understand. So it's super important to understand those 5 key core functions and where you are at. Like, give you an example, like, for us, like, we were taking on a lot of new clients, and then our, you know, like you mentioned, delivery starts to slip. And as soon as delivery starts to slip, those 5, if you're getting a bunch of, you know, 3 2-star ratings, that doesn't help the brand. So yeah, you know, it's the delivery is just as important as the marketing.
That's wonderful, Cody. I just like putting people on the spot. That's what I do. I just want to see what you were going to say. So your answer was amazing. I took some notes on some of the things that I could do. Jim, we could tell that you know your business and you know what's going on, because Jim was like, wait a minute, don't need to do more advertising. I got enough business. You guys, I love it. But you mentioned a magical word there, Cody. You said PR. And whenever I hear PR, I think about PR Collective DC. I think about my girls. And if you have been tuning in, to which I know everyone is, and watching the Roundtable Talk Show, you have seen these ladies here at least three or four times. Good morning to Camille and Chandra. How you doing, ladies?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Look at Chandra. Chandra, have you slept?
A little bit. Like, a little bit. I had a long day yesterday. It's election day, so long day.
What were you doing out there on election day? Getting in trouble again? Getting the police off?
No, I worked the polls from 4:45 a.m. to 8:45 p.m., so.
Yes. I always give Chandra a hard time because she was out trying to help the people and someone called the police on her. And the way she tells the story is so hilarious. So I just tease her. You going to tell the people what you was bothering?
I'm so embarrassed. Like, because my kids are like, Mom, people know that we were with you. Like, they know. Like, that's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. All I was trying to do was get people to register the vote. And someone called the police on me because it was me, three kids, and a dog in the neighborhood. So we're just going to leave it a day, y'all. That's it. Like, just understand it's really real out here, and you can't help people register to vote. Okay? Unless you have a big old sign on saying, I'm here in peace.
I come in peace.
Yes.
How are you, Camille?
I
don't get to
well.
See you as often.
I know. I'm gonna be back. You know, I really enjoy your platform and this opportunity. So, you know, this is my third time and it won't be my last. So thank you again for having us.
Thank you. I thought I heard something.
Yeah, you already know we're going to be already on the schedule again. while we're on the show, you know that.
You're so informative yet entertaining. But I was like, I get to see Chandra almost every week. Chandra and I sat on a panel regarding race relations, and that was interesting because they invited me to be on this panel and they wanted to discuss race relations. And I was like, okay, cool, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about race in America. And I get there and it's me, Chandra, and two other Black women, and I'm like,
what was the first thing you said?
what did I say?
I thought it would be other people on this panel. Like, wait a minute.
Oh, I did say that. I did.
You did.
I did.
Out the gate.
I did. No, because I did. I mean, talk to me. I see some people that added themselves to mute, but I need your voice on this, Leah. I need somebody to talk to me. Like, if somebody, Jim, you know what I'm saying. If we're going to discuss race relations in America, how can you discuss race relations with four Black women? Like, where are the white women? Where are the white men? Where are the Black men? Where are the Hispanic people? Like, how are you going to fix it? Like, we're just going to solve the problem by ourselves?
Well, that's why you get a couple of Indians on with you. Foreigners.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
See, I need you guys here.
Said it though. Like, it was like, wait a minute. Like, it's how she said it. It was very, I had to laugh. My inner child was just dying laughing, but she was very blunt.
Let me just tell you this, Chandra. If you think that was bad, you should have seen the second panel that I was on. They were like, do not ever come back. Actually, they were excited. They were like, oh, can we do another one with you? I'm like, yeah, because even when I ran for Long Beach City Council, I was saying all kind of stuff. And I was speaking with another lady who was running for city council in a different district. And she's like, I saw your interview the other day. She was like, you were amazing. And I said, I got a lot of flack about that interview. And she said, yeah, but you make for good television. And I was like, yes, yes. That was the goal. But I went and did the second panel, and they asked me about a week prior to the panel to be a guest. So I said, yes. So the night before the panel, they send me a list of 20 questions.
Oh my God.
Right, no, but, so I get these questions, And I'm like, okay, Sharifa. And this is when I start talking to myself. I'm like, be nice, play nice with the other children. But I go to on the panel and all that was out the window. Cause I said, as soon as we went live, I said, you want to discuss race relations and you send me 20 questions. And the first question is, how can we help the African-American community? That was the only question that even mentioned race. The other 19 questions were like, how do we love more? How do we have more peace on earth? How do we, you know? And I was like, I'm not gonna, don't waste my time. This is what I'm telling them, like literally on the show, if you wanna talk, let's talk. If that's why I love the round table, let's sit down, have a conversation, discuss what's going on. I don't do, you know, how's the weather or chit chat or, you know, if you wanna talk, let's talk. But maybe I was wrong. Maybe it was just me.
No, I'm the same way. I think people want to approach this to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, this isn't a situation where you get the choice to be comfortable. You have to come to the table uncomfortable because it's been uncomfortable for us our entire lives. And somebody let me do a Instagram takeover of a predominantly white magazine a couple days ago. And I impromptu went live and said, ask me anything. Mm-hmm. But I let them know the things that I'm going to say are going to make you extremely uncomfortable. So you got to come down with your defenses and come to the table ready to listen and to learn. And I just don't think a lot of people that are putting on these panels and these discussions are really ready for the heat that comes with that.
So and Leah, I want the heat, but I like,
you're the only one, Jim.
No, I want the heat because you know me, you can see I'm an old white guy. I'm an old white guy. I grew up, but so tell me, like, I am also a person of action. What is it I can do? Like, it's because I feel bad. I feel bad for history. I feel bad, but feeling bad isn't doing. Explain more on what I can actually do and not be and not make you feel
Black people uncomfortable, Jim.
Make other people uncomfortable. Right. I've hired you to be the token non-old person.
Yes.
That make you feel bad? I mean, tell me more about what I can do to make the world a better, make it all right. Make me
uncomfortable. No, you're fine. And the second panel that I was on, it had 11 guests and it was of different races. It wasn't just for Black women. And that was one of the questions that was asked. And the other people, all other people disagreed with me. That was one where they're like, Sharifa, we think you're wrong. And I was like, okay, it's okay. Because they had a list of things that they felt that other races could do. And the only thing that I needed people to do is just be a good person. Like, just be a good person. Just be a nice person. I don't need you to go out of your way or try to fix history. Or like, there was one lady who cried. She cried. And it was so interesting. I'm like, why are you crying anyway? But she said she felt bad because America had never apologized for slavery and that she wanted to apologize on behalf of all white people through her tears. And I said, you know what? First of all, America apologized for slavery in 2008. That's when they made an official apology. And I was like, I don't need you to cry. I don't need, you know, I just need you to be nice. That's to me. Is that, am I alone on this, Camille? Talk to me.
Oh my goodness. I totally understand. You know, one person, you know, can't represent the entire society, you know, and I think that that's what people need to understand. And like you said, it starts with one, you know, you be the change that you want to see, you know, and I think that people will begin to pay that forward. You'll begin to hold other people accountable. You know, it takes all of that. It takes a mix, not just, you know, coming with your tears, you know, that's really not going to solve solutions. As you're, you know, you need people out there on the street, living, breathing, being better people. Literally, I completely agree.
I like the use of the word accountability. You know, that I think that is something that we all need. You know, that accountability word, that idea that, you know, like, who are you accountable to? And it's a question I've asked myself quite often. It's like, who am I accountable to in every area of my life? And especially for this, like, you know, it's sometimes hard. I maybe Jim can attest to this. Sometimes hard for us to put words to it, because I want to be a kind person. I want to contribute. And you know, it's, and like you said, like, we as entrepreneurs, we want to take action. So we're like, how do we fix this thing? Because I think entrepreneurs often try to go into the future and pull what's like the future into the now. And it's like, what are the actions that we can take now in order to make sure that, you know, change does happen? And that, you know, but I love the use of the word accountability, because I think that when you see somebody stepping out of line, that you hold them accountable, that you say, you speak up and you say something. I think that's something, you know, that I feel like I've learned through this entire thing.
Mm-hmm. See, Sharif, I think it's more than just being a nice person. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think that is that does not help make up for the advantages or disadvantages that people have. Mm-hmm. An example I'll use, I sit on the boards of directors of a few companies. I sat on the board of directors of a company in Canada called BlackBerry for 13 years. Now, when you look to hire a new board of directors, you say, I'm going to hire someone because they were CEO of a company that did $1 billion in sales, and we want to take our company to $1 billion in sales. But how can we get someone? It's a chicken and egg. You can't join a board because you're not on other boards. You can't join another board because you're not. But then if you take someone and say, okay, we're going to put them on a board, but they don't have the experience, I don't want to add someone to my board who they don't add the same value, because the person I added an old white guy to my board. He was the CEO of Maple Leaf Foods, multi-billion-dollar company. Why did I add him? Because he can call the president of Costco and say, talk to Jim and tell him this, and he can coach me and say, well, when you're doing a $200 million bank line of credit, here's who you do it. And he'll talk to the chairman of the bank. And so someone with that background and experience and gravitas, they can handle an employee mentoring situation that someone who doesn't. So to get the experience, you need the experience, but you can't get the experience because you don't have the experience. And so one idea I did have is, should we make companies have a junior board member position required? That must be given to a minority. And I'm even going to include women in that, a woman or someone who's a visible minority, and make it so it's a required position. Because if someone had that experience for 5 years, then I think they could be considered more to do that. So I don't know. I mean,
I'm going to answer you, Jim, because one of the parts that I left out, that was one of the questions they asked at the end, but I spent the whole panel talking about reparations. There was one lady on there who said that she wanted to be able to shop without being followed around the store, and she wanted to be able to get loans for her business without being denied because of race. And for me, I felt like those are the cherry on the top. That's the whipped cream. Those are the things that would be nice to have. But if you give reparations to people and you repair what you destroyed, then you don't have to go into those stores. You can have your own stores. You have money, so you don't have to go and apply for a loan from anyone. You have your own resources to be able to maintain yourself. So for me, when I say be a nice person, I'm looking at that as far as an individual, one-on-one. Like, don't do the things that are racist. Like, just don't be a racist. Like, that's how I feel about it. And sometimes the things that we do are microaggressions that you don't even realize that are based on race. So to go back to your specific question, again, started with everyone disagreed with me. Like, nobody was like, yeah, Sharifa. They were like, no, we want them to do this. I don't care about none of that. Because to me, when you create a position specifically for a minority, to me, that's more like, okay, we're going to just give you this. I don't want them people to give me anything. I want the qualifications and the experience and the relationships, which is key. I had a gentleman on my show on Monday who created a white male. He couldn't have been more than 25 or 30, but he created this website called uncrowd.io. It creates investment VC opportunities for minorities, because he realized that less than 1% of VC capital went to women and minorities. So he wanted to solve the problem. so I can see that. But I would want the experience and the relationships to be able to sit on your board. That's what I would want. But since you asked the question, I'm allow Chandra, since you know, Chandra, did you hear that last question?
Yes, I did.
Chandra's breathing. You see that, right? Chandra's like, wait, let me figure out how to say breathe with me, Chandra. Nice. Breathe with me.
Because, you know, like, all this, yes. It's been a lot of placating and no real solutions when it comes to, because I work with a board that was majority of older white males, and they were in the 1%, and they asked me questions like, so what's going on in the world? I'm like, sir, like, you know, I'm going to create a position for a person of color or minority, it's so disrespectful sometimes, because there are people who of color and women minorities who can very well take the position with more experience and more education than someone that's currently sitting there. And it's the problem that we run into, that they're scrutinized a little bit more, they're looked at a little bit more, but sometimes they walk in with the experience, with the degrees, with everything, and they're still not elevated to that position because of that. So instead of creating a position, look at everything, like, take the names off the resumes and look at the experiences, and then you'll see where your talent lies sometimes. Because from working with an HR, a human resources, a vice president of human resources, I've actually been able to blindly look at basically resumes and experiences and find that we've had more people. If we put a blinder on just for a second, we could probably fix that. You know, without the preconceived notion of, okay, well, he looks right, you know, and that would help the whole situation help. But a lot of it is it's changing that thought process. It's like, there's so many things.
And I hear what you're saying, and I feel you, and I appreciate you for being fearlessly authentic. That's what I love about the guests on the show, that everyone is opinionated, everyone is authentic, they give their voice. I believe part of what Jim was saying was the same thing the young man was saying on the show the other day, is that when you're looking for VC capital, 9 times out of 10, you have to get that capital from someone within your network. And if you are not in a country club or you are not in a good old boys club, you're not even going to have friends who have, or people in your network who have the ability to fund your project. So I think what Jim was saying, and not that I necessarily agree or disagree with Jim, but in explaining it further, I think what he was saying is, we might not have met this person otherwise. So let's go out and look for someone who has the experience, someone who has the resume, has the criteria.
But it all starts with their HR department, their personnel, their recruiter, right? Mm-hmm. CEOs only get to see the resumes that have passed through their recruiting department. So we have to, the funnel that comes in, like, before you even see the resumes, those people have already been vetted, you know? So you're only seeing a snapshot of what your recruiters feel that you should see. So take the veil off of that and actually ask them, send me everyone, not just who you cherry pick. Because a lot of times with recruiters, and this is where I've had to go into some companies and talk about, listen, you cannot cherry pick who you feel. Your CEO should be able to see exactly who is applying. Give them a dossier that tells them exactly, you know, what the net is bringing in. Who do you feel like, even if that person may be missing 1 year of experience, you know, if the position requires 5, but they have 4, you know, sometimes that person may have the education that will back that up, but they don't send it to the CEO because it doesn't meet all the check marks. So it's like getting these recruiters in that talent, your talent section of your HR department, to actually give you everyone in a way so that you can see the bigger picture on who's applying and why they were disqualified, you would see that you do have the talent that's coming to your company, but your recruiters are cherry picking and giving you everybody that's checked off of that little box. And they're not looking at it from your eyes, from a CEO standpoint. So we have to go in, and there's so many different levels to, you know, knowing, because the CEO really doesn't know who's applying unless they're one-on-one, you know?
But quite honestly, I am a CEO, and I will tell you that my challenge, I don't have any time. It's not much time, but I'll give you a secret that we do in HR that is an easy thing you can do. And that is, we strip the names off the resumes. Mm-hmm. So you read the resume, you see the education, you see the experience, you can't tell whether they're male, female, black, green, purple. You can't tell. Now you can't always tell that just from the name anyways, but it takes one other screening. But you've also made a really good point there about you're trying to say, if you have two people who have the equal experience are not getting the job because they are a minority, I believe there's another problem. That is, they don't have the experience, but they can't get the experience because they don't have the experience. Right. So, and I understand that it's offensive to say, oh, we're going to create a position for someone who doesn't have the experience. I mean, take me. I think I'm very open-minded. I just added a board member because he ran a multi-billion-dollar company. Why do I want, and I asked one, the only woman I knew who runs a multi-billion dollar company. And she said, no, she's too busy. But there wasn't enough people who applied who had that thing. And like, I grew my first business from the trunk of my car to 2 billion in sales, and I can't find people who do the multi-billion dollar company. I'm just.
No, you're an anomaly.
I should give some other people some airtime.
You are fine, too. We have a conversation. We like to talk. No, we're not blaming you. But I think herein lies the problem, Jim, is that once you try to fix one thing, it's like, okay, well, I fixed that, but now I messed this up. And I didn't, because it's like we went from the board to hiring to, you know, creating experience. And it's so much that is involved, which is why I kind of got to the point. It's like, look, I don't need you to fix it. Just give me some money. I'm gonna build my $2 billion company and I'll hire who I wanna hire. That's how I solve that problem.
So I'm gonna say something which is really, really controversial.
Ooh, this is good. Did y'all share the show before, Jim?
I did do that. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Giving people money can ruin them.
Yes, I wanna be ruined.
And in Canada, if that's what people think they want, I'm telling you that's not what they want. I travel in circles with a lot of people that make a lot of money. They have a lot of money. They give their kids a lot of money. I can't hire their kids because their kids don't know how to work because they've been ruined. That's a simple and non-controversial example. In Canada, we have native people. Mm-hmm. We gave them a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And they do not have jobs. And they do not have businesses because we ruined them. We gave them so much. And to some extent, Canada, we have a nice safety net. If you want to live in Canada, you can live in Canada. You don't need to work. And then you end up, but there's no pride in money not earned. And then they can't get ahead because by giving people too much, we pushed them down, even though that was not the intent.
I hear you, Jim. I don't really think that's controversial. I think there are millions and billions and trillions of people who believe that. But just my philosophy is this. Jim, if you borrow $5 million from me, because I got it like that, y'all, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
We're going to talk, for sure.
Well, I'll take the five. Yeah, go ahead.
So will I.
Right. Now y'all got me up to my $10 million, okay? I'm going to have to pull that out of my pillowcase under the bed. But my point is, if you owe me $5 million, because our agreement or whatever you did that the court said you had to repay me my $5 million. I can take that, you know, you can't, I find it hard to say, well, I'm not going to give you this $5 million back because I know that once I give it to you, you're going to go buy crack with it. It doesn't really matter. what matters is it's owed to me. And so if something is owed to me, I can take it and light it on fire if I want to, because it's mine and it's something that I'm entitled to. I have an article that's coming out in a magazine on July 1st called Radiance Magazine. And it's a holistic magazine. It's about psychics and tarot readers and people who do a whole bunch of different things. But the white guy, editor of the magazine, loves me to death. He called and he saw me on the panel. He said, "Sharifa, will you write an article on reparations?" And I, in my head, I was like, sure, more work. But I was like, okay, they want to know, so let me tell them. And the main focus of the article was simply that the word reparations come from Latin, means to repair, basically. And so if you have destroyed, you are obligated to repair. And that's what the court systems do. Anytime you commit a crime, they make you pay restitution to the family. So you can't not pay the restitution because you think that the person's going to go get a prostitute with it. It doesn't matter. But that's my little soapbox. Cody, I would love to hear your response. If any. If not, that's fine. I'll go to Leah, Camille. Does anybody want to?
I have an issue with part of the conversation too, is because we have to talk about access. Mm-hmm. When you look at access across the board, and I'm only going to speak from the Black community and then that of the Black entrepreneurial community, we do not have the same type of access as our white counterparts. And so I know with a lot of the work that I do, specifically working with female Black founders, we have to jump through 50 different hoops just to get one GC to come out and understand why our beauty industry is a multi-billion dollar beauty industry. And even seeing the numbers on paper, they still don't want to fund our Black female founders and their startups. And so if you're talking about wealth and gaining wealth, we do not, and still to this day, do not have the same type of access as our white counterparts. And so if we talk about putting people on the board that have you're putting these levels as to they have to have this and that, that's still discriminatory in a way, because we are still working on that access that has not been granted. And then there's only a certain percentage that have kind of busted through that ceiling in order to gain that access. And so I think we have to be very cognizant of that fact, and the statistics speak for themselves. Forbes puts out an article, I feel like every week, that talks about Black founders, and especially during COVID, we're working on articles out here in Dallas right now, all the investors pulled out. And so now we're left with all of our Black and minority startups with absolutely no funding. And they already didn't have funding to begin with.
Now they don't have it.
So access, that's huge.
Yes. And
we can't discount that.
Absolutely. Now, I think, Camille, I went to you initially because Cody was talking about PR, and I said, you know what, my two PR ladies, Camille and Chandra, are here. Tell us, and you know, Camille, like, I get sidetracked. Like, I went on a different tangent on a whole different direction. And if you didn't know me and love me, you'd probably be mad. Tell us a little bit about your business, Camille.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I am the main face behind Montage PR. And again, I am one half of the PR Collective DC, which I have co-founded with Chandra Gore. And basically, Montage PR, we have really hyper-focused on small businesses, women-owned businesses, and Black-owned businesses right now. I'm really focusing on that impact piece. It's all about society right now. It's all about really kind of thrusting Black entrepreneurs to the forefront. You know, now is timely. So I'm really investing in those people, in those businesses. Again, trying to just identify what are the gaps, you know, to why we're not getting that mainstream coverage. What are the gaps, you know, to building wealth, and just assisting them with that. And over at PR Collective DC, we've decided to team up because, you know, collaboration over competition, that is our main theme there. You know, we have a lot of instances where we may have a high profile client, and it may take more than one person just to really concentrate and, you know, invest in that project. So that's where we come together to help those individuals where they may need a team of experts rather than one, you know, focusing on their project. And recently, we have really seen a lack in the PR industry and in terms of white publicists that are representing Black clients and Black entrepreneurs. So we're really focused on right now at this time, kind of teaming up with them. And that's where the collective comes in, where we can build a team to help you get your message out to that appropriate audience. You know, if you're a white publicist, you may not understand the Black audience. So you know, of course, you don't want to lose your client, but you can team up with someone like the PR Collective that can assist you on developing those tactics and rationale to getting to that target audience. I think that it's really timely that publicists do that right now.
I think that is wonderful advice. And I this goes to show that we have a lot more to talk about and that we have, you know, these are the conversations that we have. I'm actually launching a second show, which is going to be on Wednesdays, that talk about it's called Face to Face, which talks about race relations, where we sit down and specifically talk about what's going on in America, which is not this show, because this is my business show. And you kind of sometimes put people, you know, in a spot where maybe they don't want to discuss race or what's going on in the world. So I appreciate you all for, you know, for the conversation and for your thoughts. At the end of every show, what I love to do is allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to our audience and to speak directly to everyone who's listening live or in the archives and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. And we're going to go right back to you, Camille.
Well, thank you. If I had to leave with one thing, I mentioned CSR on one of our interviews before. Mm-hmm. We talked about what individuals can do. Right now, I think the society is really looking for impact. And if you're a major corporation, what are you doing to give back to society? What are you doing to build community? You know, are you providing jobs? Are you, you know, I think that that's just what's really important. You know, going back to what Cody said, what are your values? I think that that's what people want to hear right now in terms of public relations and hiring a publicist. How can you do that pivot to make sure that your customer understands what you value, you know, what your priorities are? Because right now, that's what people want to hear, especially the Black community. They want to know that you're for them, that we have as many allies as possible. And to me, that's really what the message has been lately in terms of getting timely, newsworthy, and concise placements with the media. So I just want to let people know that, you know, if you're trying to get on the news, if you're trying to get your brand in front of the public, I would go with that impact piece. How are you contributing to society at this time?
Yes, thank you. Chandra, what do you have?
I mean, I would piggyback off of what Camille said, because a lot of times we're forgetting that your community is what keeps you going. So, you know, you have to keep your feet to the ground and connected with your community that actually pays you. So making sure you're doing your community give backs, making sure you are investing into where you're gonna, you know, where you're gonna be, your longevity. And I would also like to say, just keep researching, keep learning, keep focused on exactly what you are trying to accomplish. That's pretty much it at this point. Like, she said everything I wanted to say. This is a good thing about a partnership. She said it. Just go back to that. That's it. That's it.
It's beautiful. Thank you. I love you, ladies. Leah, what do you have for us?
I guess I'll go back to our earlier conversation to your audience. If they're specifically in the business sector, just I've had a colorful career. So don't be afraid to make those pivots. I can see Chandra's face.
Yes, it's hilarious. I love me some Chandra.
And these two ladies are wonderful. I enjoyed y'all's Juneteenth IG Live.
Super hype.
Girl, she was hype, and I'm over there like dry toast. Go ahead.
It was so funny because Camille was hype, and I'm in my house like, yeah. And Chandra was like, "Can I just get a? I just want to talk about these Black products, you know." So They're hilarious to follow. I love what they're doing with Women for the Culture. But just really, you can't, I think this now is the time, especially during COVID, where you're sitting at home, you have all these ideas. It's the perfect time to try to figure out how to put it out there in the world. And so, like I said, I've had a colorful career. I went to law school and was a practicing attorney and went in-house and then decided I was going to go into fashion and then went into media. And so the sky really is the limit. You just have to put in the work. And then as opportunities arise, you just can't be afraid to put yourself out there. And everything doesn't have to be completely perfect. There's times where I've just had to just go and do all of the things along the way, and that's okay. And so I think perfectionism is killing a lot of our creative talent and our, a lot of our creative ideas, because people think it has to look a certain way. But what I found, some of my greatest blessings in my career has been when I've just hopped in there, I saw the window, boom, I went, and everything just kind of trickled along and you know, has sustained me. So that's my takeaway for today, is just get after it. And during COVID, the window is literally like this small.
Yep.
So get in there and get in action, especially while you have everybody's attention virtually. You can do so much on social media, so much on the internet. Get in there now.
Yes, yes, yes. Jim, go ahead. Jim, take us out.
Sharifa, this was an awesome show, awesome experience. I really love everyone else who's on the show. So connect to me on LinkedIn, please. I just love it. In COVID, we are forced to change.
Yep.
And that's good. We need to be constant learners, and we need to welcome the change. And now we're forced to do it, may as well do it. So let's go out and change.
Thank you. I thank you for being on the show, Jim. I'm definitely going to go pop over to your LinkedIn and connect with you and have further conversations, see what you're talking about. And the next time you post that board position, I'm going to throw my resume into the ring. Now, I haven't ran a $2 billion company, but I'm cute. Like, does that qualify for anything? No?
I don't think you're not allowed to say that. Wouldn't that be sexist?
I told you I'm sexist. Like, I am definitely, I'm sexist. You know what I mean? I got to use what I got to get what I want. You know what I mean? That's my philosophy. Anyway, like I said, when we started the show, this is going to be an amazing show. I already knew it. Just knowing some of the resumes and bios, I'm like, this is going to be a great show. So I want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially have to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. But don't just stop there with viewing it. Please support our guests. They are here. They are giving up their time, their information, their opinions, their thoughts for you. So you can learn and you can start your own conversations, but their information is in the post. Please visit their website. Please contact them on social media. And when you speak to them, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. If you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.